This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas from the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good.
My name is Gabriel Urbina, and I am your first Bad Ideas host.
My name is Sarah Shackett. I'm your second Bad Ideas host.
And my name is Zach Valenti, your third Bad Ideas host.
And today we are once again joined by the man, the myth, the internet legend, executive producer of Radio Drama Revival and content creator for Khan Academy, is Mr. David Bryanstrom.
Thank you. What a pleasure it is to have this butt in the fourth seat.
Yeah.
And normally, folks, this is the show where the hosts terrorize their poor, innocent guests with terrible ideas that they found in their journeys through the internet. And then we try to turn them into the pitches, at least for good stories. But watch as the tables turn. And Mr. David Bryanstrom is the idea bringer this week. We are the ones that are about to have horror unleashed upon us.
Yeah, and the story that I brought for you today is a little grim.
Okay.
So we can see, but I was telling Sarah before we recorded, without giving away what was in the story, that I think that there's the germ of like a Coen Brothers style dark comedy.
Oh, all right. All right.
So I'm going to send you a link because I feel like, you know, the body of the story basically gives away any shock of the title. So is that showing up in the sidebar? Yeah. So this is from EstonianWorld.com. This is an article translated from Eesti Ekspress. The original one is in Estonian, which I cannot read. The headline is, a global neo-Nazi organization led by a 13-year-old Estonian schoolboy. This is from April of this year.
Wow.
Estonia's internal security service captured a ringleader of the extremist Feuerkrieg division, Fire War Division in German, FKD for short, a 13-year-old schoolboy known online as Commander FKD. The boy lived in a small Estonian town.
Whoa.
The internal security service stopped the activities of the boy using Commander FKD or Kriegsherr, warlord in German, pseudonym in the encrypted FKD online forums in January. The Estonian weekly newspaper Eesti Ekspress reported, the boy, who cannot be prosecuted nor named due to his age, was a ringleader of the Feuerkrieg division, a small international neo-Nazi organization founded in late 2018.
Wow. My God.
According to the New York-based Jewish NGO, the Anti-Defamation League, an international anti-hate organization, the Feuerkrieg Division embraces the most extreme interpretations of white supremacist ideology. Their current leader lives in Estonia, but the group's membership is increasingly American. Mm-hmm. The group celebrates the concepts promoted in Siege, a collection of noxious essays written by U.S.-based neo-Nazi James Mason, the ADL said in a brief written before the capture of the Estonian ringleader. I'm going to scroll down. Here's some heavy shit. It's heavily influenced by the Addison.
This is not the heavy shit? Have we not
It gets worse, right? The Feuerkrieg division is heavily influenced by Atomwaffen, the atomic weapon division, a neo-Nazi group allegedly tied to five murders across the U.S. I'm gonna keep scrolling. The 13-year-old commander set the minimum age limit of 16 for other recruits. And that's, I'm going to read this paragraph and then stop. The administration and management of the FKD was all conducted online, enabling the Estonian ringleader to hide his identity, including his real age. Ironically, the commander set the minimum age for recruits at 16, while he himself was just 13 years old. The members of the organization were, of course, unaware of this fact, Eesti Ekspress said.
Oof. Okay.
Yo, this is an Orson Scott Card premise run through the 2020 filter. Just saying.
Okay, let's see.
I like how the previous episode was like joyous and lighthearted, and then you're like, David, what have you brought? And I'm like, underage Nazis.
I mean, you've done the signature move of comedy and then turn to pain, which
classic.
We can do nothing else but appreciate.
Well, it's
Do we have a timer before we...
Yes, that's what I'm about to say. Oh, like, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's definitely set a 10-minute timer.
Venture forward into the woods.
This story would not leave my head because I was like, this is so scary. You know, I work, my job, like, puts my stuff on YouTube all the time, yeah, right? That's, like, the primary engine of how Khan Academy functions. And I'm just thinking about, like, how people get radicalized. Where was he radicalized? And the answer is usually, like, on YouTube. And I don't know. No, I'm not sure what can be done with this.
I think that it is worth kind of highlighting of, like, you know, here at No Bad Ideas, we do lots of stories that deal with lighthearted topics such as crime and violence and people doing really awful things to one another. But this is on another level, and it is kind of worth sort of highlighting, like, this is scary, and we are about to try to see how we can turn it into a good story, but it is not a topic that should be taken completely lightly. It is really, really terrifying the way that some of these ideologies and some of these things are reaching all kinds of people, but especially really, really young ones, and how that is leading to real consequences. So let that all not go unsaid.
Yeah, and I think part of it is also that as a Jew, my response to this is like, there's only so much of my brain that I can devote to like shock and horror, and the rest I have to accommodate with like gallows humor.
Oh, totally.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And
I think there is an element of gallows humor in this idea. You know, we can talk about whether we want to abstract it from the sort of right wing online radicalization element. But there is the element of there is a young child who is fooling teenagers and grown ass adults into doing something very strange while not revealing that they are, in fact, themselves 13.
Right. Which reminds me of the Orson Scott Card premise, spoilers for Ender's Game, of teenagers that take on anonymous online personas to basically become like the politicians of their day. In a short order of time, relatively speaking.
And that's a B plot in that story.
Yeah.
Peter becomes like hegemon of the entire planet at like 16, right?
Yep.
I kind of like the idea that this is about, that the story is not about the 13-year-old, but is about an Estonian investigative reporter that like breaks the story.
Ooh, I like that
idea. And like destroys the, like when I thought about this, I thought first about Unicorn Riot, the investigative journalism outfit that loves to like sneak into neo-Nazi discords.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I haven't heard of that.
Rip them open from the inside. Oh, you don't know about this. They're fucking great. And they just go around steadily destroying Nazi cells with the power of investigative journalism and like
that's
posting,
great.
You know, like doxing used for good. Like, hey, did you know your employee is a Nazi? You know, probably you wouldn't want to employ him, right? You know, it's very good. And so that was sort of the idea that came to mind when I was thinking about like, what do I bring here?
Right, just like, you know, it open like, on the sort of parent-teacher conference between this investigative reporter and unsuspecting Mr. and Mrs. 13-year-old Nazi parents. That's just like, so this is going to be an awkward conversation.
and then flashback from...
Right. Do you know what your son's doing on the internet? Cut to like, get off your iPad, Jimmy. It's dinner time.
And that's like, there can be a little bit of that. I want to acknowledge that in internet terms, we are all ancient.
Right.
And I don't want to sort of be punching down on the youths with their TikToks and their screens and their
and their encrypted white supremacist groups.
Well, I think, no, Sarah, I think you're right. You know? The villain of this, I think, is maybe not the child. Like, the child sucks, but they don't have the agency. But they weren't, like, lured down the path
by
nobody.
Yeah, like, but children suck. Kind of, period.
But, like, the bad guy is, like, a PewDiePie type figure.
Oh, sure. Yeah. All in on that.
I would be curious about the version of this that is almost like, you know, we need to talk about Kevin, mm-hmm. where, you know, the
I had that thought.
The sort of like focus of the story, the protagonists are the mom and dad of this kid. And what happens when one day, you know, you somehow, whether it's because of an investigative reporter or because of police or just because you see the wrong thing on your, or perhaps the right thing on your child's screen, you realize, my God, like, you know, my young son is doing all of these very, very scary things online.
Yeah, it's not just that your 13-year-old like is a red-pilled misogynist, it's that he's like the leader of a terror cell.
And how do you approach that? How do you kind of deal with that? How do
and
you
can you sort of deprogram and denazify this person who you love before like law enforcement gets involved?
Especially if you yourself are very unambiguously on the side of, you know, truth, liberty, and the pursuit of justice, and all of the things that Nazism is not about, you know.
Well, so this was the Buck Wild thing about that. I think it was a Washingtonian article. This, you know, like upper middle class family in Silver Spring, Maryland, whose son got super into like online hard right politics, is that it was a Jewish family.
Yeah.
And they were like, what are you doing, kid? Like, do you have any cultural memory of what these politics did to our people in Europe?
Right.
Like, I mean, how can you continue to reify that?
Which sets off the alarm bells in my mind of like, wasn't Hitler a Jew? And also, like, isn't there something weird about like the like or rather something analogously weird about like, I'm Jewish and we should hate Jews, and like, I'm 13, but no 13-year-olds allowed.
Right.
I don't know if there's anything sort of that to run with that detail.
Yeah, there is sort of that like inherent contradictory tension, which I think kind of goes into how do you try to talk to someone who is clearly no longer thinking within the frames of reference that you use. Mm-hmm. And the more that I sort of think about it, the more I think it would be very upsetting, but fascinating to watch a movie about kind of the parents and the psychologists and people trying to find a way to reach out to this person.
I have a notion that could take us back a little bit towards our normal no bad ideas silliness. And I want to acknowledge the silliness because I would also watch this movie, which I imagine, would be sort of in a more serious vein. But part of the sort of, and I'm glad you mentioned the family, like in Silver Springs was Jewish. There's a little bit of that going on where there's this sort of mishmash of identities that happen online. And especially when you're a young person, when you're a teenager, you're trying on a lot of personas, and the internet gives you complete free rein to do that. And kind of be anyone you want to be, including the leader of a terror cell. And so I would be interested, this would be a little bit more Coen Brothers-esque, is this, these parents discover their child has kind of been radicalized. They can't really speak to them in a traditional sense, so they have to start like
go
a
undercover
YouTube or a Twitch channel to try and like attract their teenage son and lure them back away from harmful ideologies. And they end up starting this like YouTube or internet sensation and then have to maintain that.
Wait, so they
dark web up, hope
like,
punk?
a cover identity as also terrorists?
I think maybe in that sort of gray zone of what is the name that they're using for like Sam Harris types, the like intellectual dark web types or whatever, but like
right.
It's totally a front.
Debate me, son.
My sort of
only meat.
I mean, really, they would like establish a PewDiePie character to compete with the right wing PewDiePie character.
Right. And that is, I think, kind of like the connective tissue that I would need to kind of lay down is how can they be sure that their son would find that content online?
Right.
And sort of in a timely manner, because they don't have 2 years to like steadily build up an audience and, you know, get a big enough following that it would land on their radar organically.
All right. I think that's time. What do we call this thing?
Oh, God.
The darkest web.
We need to talk about the dark web. Yeah, I don't know. Sure.
Discord at home, Discord abroad.
Oh.
Hashtag Discord.
Right.
What we talk about when we talk about how your son's a secret terrorist.
How I learned to fear the internet.
How I learned to start worrying and fear the internet.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Sure.
Hashtag Discord. How I learned to start worrying and fear the internet.
Well, David, thank you for bringing us this idea. And this is a little removed from what we normally do here, but I think it is worth to think about all kinds of stories and think about sort of like, you know, there is a real value in stories that confront us with the oftentimes really, really scary and really upsetting things that are happening around us, and whether it those stories tackle the darkness head on or find a way to subvert them and kind of like steal some of their power by defanging them. I think that both of those have a lot of value. And it's part of the reason why the media that we make and the media that we consume and the media that we have around us plays such an important, valuable part in our life. So yeah, I think that this is a really, really good wrestling with one hell of a bad idea. Hey everybody, Gabriel here. We're going to get back to the next bad idea in just a moment. But first, a very quick message from, well, from ourselves, really. So these past few weeks, a lot of people have been sending us messages kind of asking, how can we help you guys keep making the show? We love that No Bad Ideas is still happening. We love that we have this distraction. We love that we still kind of get weekly doses of really crazy stories and really, really terrible ideas that people have had. How can we help you guys keep making the show through this very strange, very turbulent time? Which, first of all, that's awesome. Like, we really, really appreciate that you guys want us to keep doing this work, even during these very, very kind of uncertain moments that we're all living through. But secondly, good news. There's a way to do it. There's a way to help us make this show and feel like you're Lorenzo de Medici all at the same time. What is it? It's signing up to support No Bad Ideas on Patreon.com. Patreon, it's a really, really great service. You sign up and you set an amount of dollars. $1, $5, $20, whatever makes sense to you. And every month, Patreon charges your credit card that amount and gives it to the artists that you know and love and that you've specified, these are the people that I want to help. It's one of the best tools right now for directly funding artists. And so many creators are depending on it through these very strange, turbulent months that we're in the middle of. So if you want to do a good deed, if you want to help us keep bringing this very, very silly show to your ears, there's no better way to do it than going to nobadideaspodcast.com/support. That's nobadideaspodcast.com/support and signing up for whatever makes sense to you. Our supporters on Patreon are already the reason why we can make this show, and we're so excited to still be making it right now. So if you can help us, it really would mean the world. And in the meantime, we're really excited to bring you another bad idea right now. Thank you. All right, everybody, welcome back to No Bad Ideas, and welcome back to our chance to have a quick creative corner chat with Mr. David Reinstrom. So, David, let's why don't we begin once again by going over a little bit of what you do. So you're an executive producer for Radio Drama Revival. You're a content creator for Khan Academy. I feel that both of those are titles that could cover all manner of sin. can you unpack a little bit what you do for each one of these roles?
Sure. And since the executive producer thing is pretty recent for RDR, we're still sort of figuring out what my responsibilities are. I'm mostly going to be assisting Ellie and Will and the rest of our production team in figuring out just how to move the process along and supporting our host and our production, you know, helping Ellie and Will come up with like ideas for episodes. But really just stepping back from a leadership role and just being more structural support so that Ellie can exert the same sort of authorial control. Serving the margaritas. Like, yeah. So that Ellie can have the same sort of authorial control over the show that I had for 5 years.
So there are a couple tracks that I'm really curious about, David. I think maybe for the sake of our listeners, the superhero origin story of RDR. And then I think for anybody that may be in the situation of running a long-term podcast, just what it takes to responsibly, with integrity, and with, you know, sort of a sense of like legacy and love, handing the baton off. I don't think that's something we've ever done. So I'd be curious to pick your brain on that.
And perhaps specifically your superhero origin story, because I know this is perhaps one of those like Green Lantern situations where it was before you and it will be there after you.
Right. Well, I do have a specific origin story for my day job. I'm trying to think of what the origin story of, because I met, so RDR began in, I want to say like 2007, in like January 2007, as a terrestrial broadcast at a small community station in Portland, Maine. So Fred Greenhalgh, my co-executive producer and the original host, created that show as a weekly terrestrial broadcast and then transitioned to podcasting. And then I met him probably 2012, 2013. At a science fiction convention in Minneapolis, and we became friends. And as he started to burn out on RDR, he and I grew closer. And I, at some point, I think in like 2014, 2015, it was when Stan Freberg died. I made an appreciation of the audio, like the advertising creator / audio dramatist Stan Freberg. And I think that sort of gave Fred the idea like, oh, it would be possible for me to hand the show over to someone. That's like the short version of Fred transitioning to me. And then me transitioning to Ellie was like meeting and befriending Ellie. And the way that like I told Ellie, like the way that I tell this story is it felt almost like a marriage proposal. Because I asked Ellie, you know, like, you know, would you do me the honor of, you know, because Fred and I talked about it and he gave his blessing, you know. Ellie and I became friends initially, and in the process of us becoming friends, I started to mentor them in interviewing. And so we started like talking shop about that, and I became like a support for them, and we would, you know, trade ideas and techniques, and I grew to really like trust them. And I don't know, I think I got to a point at RDR after 5 years of a weekly deliverable that I was like, I'm enjoying this. I've made a lot of great friends, like all three of you I met through doing RDR, right?
That's right.
But I think, I don't know, to put it this way seems a little pragmatic and gross, but I quote unquote got what I needed from being host. Like I made the friends that I wanted to make. I don't know. And it's not like I'm going away from RDR. Like I'll still probably do 10 to 20% of the interviews. But I thought like I have occupied this position long enough. Like it's time. I got a lot of cool opportunities as a result of hosting RDR. Like I had a gig with Wondery for a while. I got to go to France to give a talk. you know, which enabled me to bring my then girlfriend, now wife, along with, so I could propose marriage to her on her birthday in Paris.
That's amazing.
Humble brag. No, just braggy brag.
No, that's a straight up brag, man.
That's a straight up brag.
That is well a well-deserved brag. Well, yeah.
So I got a lot of great opportunities from being the host of Radio Drama Revival. You know, I got to enmesh myself in the audio drama community. And I don't know, like I think it's time. I have drunk deeply enough of the fountain, and it's time to like pass my spot to someone else who would also do a great job with it. You know, I think part of it is managing that transition in a way that I don't know. I just didn't want to like dump Ellie in the host chair and be like, ta-da, there you go. Like I'm going to be around for as long as they need me, you know?
Right.
Right.
In order to manage a smooth transition. And part of that is not just the strength of my friendship and my relationship with Ellie, but also like the strong interpersonal relationships and friendships that we have throughout the entire team. Like RDR is now an 8-person operation. It is a machine, you know, and that means that when one of us is having like a bad day or a bad week, like the rest of us can help and support and accommodate that person.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
wow, that sounds beautiful. Great.
Let me, Zach, I feel like, oh, sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Well, I feel like I lost the plot of your original question, Zach.
I think that answered it plenty fine.
Okay.
And I guess my follow-up question to that would be how your experience, your role, your calling as a grammarian factors into all this, and maybe your superhero origin story at your, you know, your job.
Sure. Well, before we hop onto that, Gabriel, did you have a question about RDR?
It is radically different, so you should answer Zach's first.
Okay.
Don't worry, I'll come back for you.
The Khan Academy story is buck wild. So I've been working at Khan Academy for 5 years now. It's like my dream job, you know. So I was hired in 2015 as the result of a talent search. Again, this is just going to be a straight up brag. Like, I don't really know how to feel about this because it's such a bonkers story. But when I'm from the Chicago suburbs. I went to school in St. Louis. When I was done with school, I moved to the city of Chicago. I started working for an educational games company. I was the editorial director. When I say editorial director, I mean, I was the only employee. There were other contractors. There was my friend Michael, who was out in Oakland, who was a contractor. But I was the only full-time employee of this firm. My boss lived in Wisconsin, and we had a good product, but we weren't selling. I was like not super happy in that job. Like, I just didn't feel like I was doing anything super worthwhile. Like, I liked the work that I got to do, but the games that we were making were not getting a lot of like attention. And so in order to start getting them some more attention, I started making these very involved chalk stop motion animation videos on YouTube. There's about 50 some of these. They're called chalking points. And I did them in character as the company's mascot, Artie Q. Pebbleton. So it wasn't even as me. It's like, if you look one of these up, you'll, you know, hear me doing like a mild character voice. And in like, I don't know, February 2015, Khan Academy announced it was doing its first ever talent search. And I sent in a bunch of videos and I, you know, wrote an essay on why like teaching grammar was important to me and why I was like so excited about like language and the possibilities of language and how I wanted students and learners to feel like children and learners to feel about language. Because I think that there's so much angst and class anxiety,
yes,
wrapped up in English. And, you know, one of the main philosophies of the grammar course that I ended up developing for Khan Academy is that there are many Englishes and all of them are great.
That's awesome.
when we talk about like correct grammar is a very specific subset that we call standard American English. And I'm going to talk about everything inside that box, but it doesn't mean that things outside of that box are necessarily bad. Anyway, I ended up being one of 10 winners of that talent search. They flew me and the other 9 out to Mountain View to have like a fun weekend and like meet everybody on the team and shake hands with Sal and go to YouTube headquarters in San Bruno. They wouldn't let us go on the slide. They have a slide in the office, but they wouldn't let us go on there, which is fine. Not bitter. And then at the end of it, you know, my friend Elizabeth, who was then the director of content, was like, hey, just so you know, there is a like a job, there's a fellowship for a grammarian if you'd like to apply for that. And it kind of felt like the bottom had dropped out of my world, you know, because I couldn't believe that the whole thing wasn't a fluke. Uh-huh. But it wasn't. Mm-hmm. And then I got that job, which was great. That's my superhero origin story, is I was sort of plucked from obscurity. And then I developed this grammar course, which has been seen by like a bewildering number of people. Like sometimes I will get clocked by children who recognize my voice, which is really, really profoundly strange. When Jillian and I were on our honeymoon, we were in Charleston, and the family at the table next to us, like the kid recognized my voice as David the Grammarian.
Oh my God, that's so cool.
And they bought us dinner. Like they secretly bought us dinner.
Oh my God.
Like they left before we did and like paid the maitre, like
said,
that's a very South Carolina move.
Yeah. It was, I was overcome. I regret that I didn't have the chance to say thank you. Like I thanked the kid for using Khan Academy, and I was very grateful that like I had gotten her through high school at that point. By the time that she had, you know, like in the time between me making the course and her, like she had used it for like 4 years, which was bonkers.
I feel like amazing. For the sake of that evening, you should have had a cape underneath your shirt to break out the way out of the restaurant. But anyway. That is an amazing story. You had a question, Gabrielle.
I wanted to ask. So I sort of feel, going back to kind of your radio drama revival sort of function, I kind of feel that for as long as I've known you, and I kind of knew your work before I had the pleasure of knowing you as a person, I sort of feel that you have been... one of the real stewards of audio fiction. Wow. You've kind of seen so many people do so much work. You have one of the most encyclopedic knowledges and just kind of most thorough databases of anyone that I know about the medium. Since you kind of started work at Radio Drama Revival, I'm curious if you've seen, to kind of bring it all in together, maybe a little bit, what are the major changes in kind of the grammar of audio fiction that you've observed? How do you think that kind of the work has, and maybe kind of like the specifically the like storytelling lingua franca that we use, like what kind of like major changes and trends have you seen?
Well, so I should caveat all of this by saying at the outset that like part of what excited me so much about being the host of Radio Drama Revival is I feel like when I became host in, you know, 2016, late 2015, we were seeing this, I believe I called it a pre-Cambrian explosion of diversity, right? of podcasts. And I feel like it's expanded so much more in the last several years, in the last half decade, that I no longer feel like I have a handle on the medium. You know, like I had my ear to the ground in 2016, 2017. But now the ground has shifted so much that I worry that I am not equipped to make big pronouncements about the state of the medium.
That's fair.
Like, Spotify bought it.
And I think that in many ways that is a pronouncement on the state of the media, even.
Is that it is too large to be knowable. Sure.
Right, right.
So I want to be clear that I'm coming at this with a place from a place of like utmost humility, and that I don't know what I don't know.
Now that is a humble brag.
Now be recklessly irresponsible.
Recklessly irresponsibly, I think that there has been a move. I think we've talked about this before, probably, but the idea that in places that had a more established tradition of audio fiction that was unbroken by the primacy of television, that there is less of a need to acknowledge the camera, quote unquote, right? That like British audio comedy doesn't need to front the medium. And say like, okay, this is, you know, this is an audio log of a specific character, or saying this is mm-hmm. surveillance tape. You know, so I came up in the medium working on Our Fair City, and Our Fair City is a post-apocalyptic science fiction show that is all told through the medium of spliced together surveillance tapes. I think that a lot of foundational audio dramas, you know, have that framing device where you're saying, okay, the reason that you can listen to this is that you're listening to voicemails, you know, in the case of Love and Luck or 36 mm-hmm. Questions. And part of that is a reflection of constraints imposed by budget, right? I'm not saying that there's anything like bad about this, and I'm not saying that people will not continue to make shows with these devices. But I think that as more money enters audio fiction world, we're going to see more and more of a move away from an acknowledgement of the diegesis.
Agreed.
Like the
we're gonna get more fade in,
world. More fade in,
and
yeah,
just like the, be in it.
The example I always give is that, you know, by the time Lord of the Rings came out, by the time Fellowship of the Ring came out, like, you didn't have to explain why we were witnessing the scenes we were witnessing. It's not like you had Gandalf leaning down to like tap the lens and be like, is this thing on, hobbits? You know, I think we're still going to have a lot of is this thing on, hobbits. And I think that's fine.
Although Hobbits with a GoPro.
Hobbits with a GoPro is fantastic. Mission. God, I should have brought that instead of Nazi children. But
it would be equally horrifying, just like
just I don't know what you're talking about. That to me sounds like a good idea.
Think about the Took family.
Sure.
Think about Pip and Took.
Yeah.
Just
it's great. Isn't that great? Or is that a Mary line? I don't know.
Which line? I didn't catch.
Put it in the ground. It isn't the ground. The two of them.
That's Pippin.
Sorry, what were we talking about? Oh, yeah. So I think that we're going to see a lot more fade-ins, as Zach put it, like more coming at story from different angles and different devices. And yeah, and to be clear, I don't think that a framing device is bad. I just think it's interesting that initially, regardless of budget, Americans and Canadians seemed to need to find a way into the story. Yeah. Like mm-hmm. that whatever you were listening to, it had to be a surveillance recording or something like it. Like
a fake public radio station
that people wouldn't accept that whatever was inside the podcast enclosure, whatever was inside this envelope of a thing we call a fiction podcast, like it couldn't just be a television show. It needed to be packaged in some way.
Right.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm not being sufficiently articulate about this, and that makes me angry.
Oh, no,
I think that is right carrying the point across beautifully.
Okay. So that's my grand pronouncement. That's one of my grand pronouncements, is I think that's a direction that the medium is.
Excellent grand pronouncement.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. I think that is the time that we had for today. But David, thank you so much for being on No Bad Ideas. It has been
a pleasure,
a privilege, an honor, a joy, all of the above. For the people that want the pleasure, honor, privilege, joy of more of your work, what's the best way to make that happen? What is the best way for them to fill their lives with more of the Rhinestrom Storm?
Well, you can listen to the backlog and honor my legacy going forward by listening to Radio Drama Revival at radiodramarevival.com or at Radio Drama Revival on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter at Icarus Floats. I should probably be on Instagram more often, but I'm also use that same handle on Instagram. And if you search for, if you go to khanacademy.org/grammar, you will find the course that I made in 2015. And if you look, right now it's a beta, but if you go through the ELA beta on khanacademy.org, you will find the video work that I've been doing lately, which is some of the most delightful and bonkers videos I've gotten to produce in a while.
And just to be abundantly clear, the cooking show that you talked about on Monday's episode, that's on your Twitter?
you will be able to find out about the occasional cuisine a la quarantine events, which I do through my friend's company, Speakeasy. I will be announcing those dates on Twitter.
Beautiful. That sounds wonderful. So everybody, please be on the lookout for that.
Thank you so much again for joining us.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Well, if you can't make one of those, just send me a picture of the things you have in your pantry and I'll tell you what you can make for dinner.
He means it. He will 100% do it.
He will actually do this. Yeah. Take him up on it.
Thank you so much, David. And thank you all so much for listening to No Bad Ideas.
This has been No Bad Ideas, produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Many thanks to our patrons for their partnership in making this show happen. And a special shout out to our Idealist members, Rena Sarame and Jennifer Schneider. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at nobadideaspodcast.com/support. And if you love this show, please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks.